This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everybody, Paulie here in the Hard Drive Radio studios, joined today by none other than Greta Van Fleet. Gentlemen, thank you so much for
Hello.
Coming to see us today.
Hey. It's our pleasure.
Thanks for inviting
us. Quite
an
exciting experience to be here today.
It sure is.
Scintillating. Get out of that New York heat.
Oh, man. You guys picked a hell of a day to
yes,
do it.
We did.
Yes. 90 degrees, super humid. It's just gross.
Smells like Febreze out there.
It does. Just like Febreze.
I was melting.
I mean, you guys, do you get, like, does it get this hot in Michigan for you guys at all?
Yeah.
Depends on the day and the time.
I would say so.
And
the mugginess.
The
mugginess.
And the time and the month. And
depends
the year.
On the weather, basically, really.
The sobriety of the situation.
Yes. So short answer, yes.
Yeah. Right,
yeah.
It does
right.
get this high.
That's
long
right.
answer, yes, but with caveat. Josh, I want to start with you. Tell me, you know, basically how this band kind of formed up, because I know, you know, you're related to 3/4 of the band, so that
yeah,
probably made it.
That's 75%.
Ultimately, it started with Jake, you know, who I guess I don't know. It's sort of like his vision kind of came to life after so long, but it was really natural. I walked out and started singing, you know, because I was always doing that, you know, and could do it. And it was like, you know, that was the theater background and whatever. And then Sam came in and then Daniel and off to the races. Yay!
He was a bass singer.
That's
in choir.
Kind of what went, I guess.
Who was?
Josh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, I was not. He's pulling your leg.
No, he is true. He
no,
is
I
true.
Was not. I can drum. I can drum pretty
you
all right,
bass.
No, he was.
But that's
no,
irrelevant.
Not bass guitar.
But that's irrelevant.
In choir.
Bass vocal in choir.
Bass vocal.
Well, Jake, tell me a little bit about
that's
how.
That's true.
It,
actually, yes, I thought he said I played the bass.
No, Josh
no.
can't play anything with strings
no,
on it.
You're
no,
a vocal bass.
Well, I can. I probably
choir.
Just. Well, no, I don't have the actual
Alrighty.
Ability as of now. No, it's just a
if I sat and
all right,
I learned
all right.
it.
Let's like
I
reel
can
it
definitely.
So I mean, when was the first time you picked up a guitar?
I've always been playing, so I can't remember. I don't know. Maybe 5 was when I can remember playing guitar for the first time.
As soon as he could crawl over to
I've got
it.
Pictures of me with the guitar when I was like 2-3 years old. So,
how about you, Sam?
Well, I started playing bass probably like 8th grade. I was 12 or 13. And then I kind of got bored with it, so I picked up keyboard. And they've been with me ever since.
You, Danny?
Yeah, right around the same time Sam picked up his instruments, I also decided to pick up a few instruments. I actually was a guitarist before a drummer, and I've been playing guitar since I was like 6, somewhere around there. But drums came late middle school when I met these guys, and we started playing some music together.
He came in and to the garage to jam with us, and he could play all of my riffs. I'm like,
yeah.
How did you?
He's fairly good at Swinat, too.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's an acquired coordination.
It's a strange instrument, isn't it? Like?
Yeah, you need a lot of eye-teeth coordination for
right,
that.
Right. Jimi Hendrix probably would have been fairly good at
it. Absolutely. Actually, you know, I want to ask Jake about that because I was, you know, I saw you guys play live last night and, you know, about the time where you put your guitar behind your head and you're playing the solos, I'm like, all right, these guys are too much for me, man. Like, how do you, like, it's hard enough to play guitar. It's hard enough to, like, play solos. How do you get to the point where you're like, I'm going to try this, you know, upside down behind me where my arms don't even work that way, you know?
Just for fun. I can do it with a double neck, too. I'll get 12 string on top. No, you know, no one does that.
Yeah, I can do it
That's
with
fun.
A double neck.
Yeah, now I'm bragging now. Yeah, no, yeah.
Can you do it on stilts?
Maybe.
Practice.
You know you get to Carnegie Hall, right?
Practice. That's how you do it. You guys, you know, there's a definitely a fun family dynamic, you being brothers and all. So, you know, when a band hits the road and they're living in the same space, and you definitely kind of figure out, you know, who's going to be a pain in the ass, who's going to be cool. So
all
you guys already have that out of the way already. You know.
Everybody's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Everybody's
we
a
take
pain
turns.
In the ass except me.
Yeah, I agree with Sam. Everybody's a pain in the ass except for me.
Okay, I changed my mind. Sam's a pain in the ass. No one else is.
I think everybody here is fairly good to be around. We have fun together, you know, and there seems to be no problem.
Danny, how did you get roped into all this?
Just like you said, they roped me in.
Exactly.
It wasn't really my choice initially. I went to school with Sam. We all went to the same high school, but I've basically grown up with Sam. and is, you know, they had a band formed with a previous drummer, and they were just playing a bunch of music, and I went over periodically to join in just to have some jam sessions.
That
and
wasn't it. You wanted to be in the band.
Well, I did. Who doesn't want to be in a rock and roll band? But yeah, you know, some things happen. It was kind of written on the wall, I guess. It eventually got to that point, and then
it made sense at that moment that Daniel had to come.
I got asked the question, and I answered it.
And it was, and it I do.
I married all three of them on the spot.
So, you know, what was your first gig outside of your hometown? Do you remember?
Outside of our hometown, probably Swartz Creek, Jan's Bar.
Yeah.
It was just this random bar.
Jan's Bar.
Yeah, Jan's Bar. It's just this little tiny place.
Vassar,
Michigan? Swartz Creek.
Swartz Creek.
Do I know where that is? No. Do I know the name of it? No.
Yes. excellent. Swartz Creek.
But yeah, it was just this little bar. There was, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was in eighth grade, so thank God my parents let me and all of us go into the bars when I was like, just 16. An eighth grader, and all. I was like 13 years old.
Oh, yeah.
We were like 16, yeah. And you were like 13.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, they didn't give you any kind of issues at all because you guys were kids. They're like,
some bars didn't. Yeah. Other bars did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some trouble.
And that was our high school career. We are on the weekend, instead of going and hanging out with your friends, we were going to the bars, you know, playing, playing rock and roll.
It's a lot more fun.
It is. It is. Good trade-off.
You guys were the cool kids.
Clearly. Exactly.
Well,
we were the weird kids.
We were the weird kids.
I don't know. I define cool as just doing what you want.
And that's kind of what it was. I mean, really. Was what it was.
Cool.
How old are you guys now?
Me and Daniel are 18.
And me and Josh are 21.
It's Danny, Sam.
Daniel. Well, I say Daniel. I don't think there's another soul on this earth that says Daniel except me.
And my parents, maybe. Who named
me? Is that what they call you when you're in trouble?
Daniel, no, that's what they call me. They're the ones who coined Danny. You know, really?
Really,
Danny?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Neat.
And everybody calls him Danny, so now we have to call him Daniel.
And I'm signed under contract as Danny, so there you go.
Wow. There it is. That's
are you official. Actually?
Yes.
Beautiful.
We're gonna have to get that revised.
That's not legitimate.
That's the loophole.
So tell me about, you know, building up to getting to a point where you guys are ready to record an EP. You know, you go around, you're playing shows. Are you doing any, like, real touring, or are you just trying to, like, play in the area and get exposure?
Oh, it's kind of – we're kind of on a mini tour now. We did have time – for the last 2.5 years, we've been in Rust Belt Studios out of Detroit, and we've had time to record quite a bit of material. So thank God for that.
Yeah, but no, we're going to be touring again in August. But the material, if you're asking, like, when we have time to write the material, a lot of it comes from, what, probably 2 years back when we just wrote, went during the week and stuff. Now we don't have a lot of time to do that, unfortunately. But we got a lot of good songs stashed away right now in the studio, pretty much ready to record. So it's just getting back in the studio.
So you said you recorded where? Rust Belt Studios for the EP?
Yes.
All right. Did you work with a producer on that?
We did. Al Sutton and Marlon Young, who's and the band leader for Kid Rock's band. And yeah, it was super helpful. Those guys taught us quite a bit about the studio. Because I would say, if you know, defining us as maybe live musicians would be a better, you know, interpretation of who we are as artists. So not really studio musicians, but in the last 2.5 years, they've really helped us understand it, you know, more fundamentally. So yeah, they've played a big role in what's going on.
And Al actually did sound last night. We shipped him out to New York.
Shipped.
Put him in a crate.
Yeah, that's awesome. How many more stops do you have on this little mini tour, and then what's kind of coming up?
Right from New York on Thursday, we fly to L.A. We're playing a show at the Viper Room in L.A., and then we have some press stuff there, and then we come home for a short break until we head to Canada and then start our first debut.
Yeah, two weeks.
Headlining tour.
2.5 week headlining tour.
Yeah, right?
It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome. What are you guys rolling around in? Do you have like a bus or like a...
We have a wagon. And Mike.
We have a wagon and our tour manager, Mike, pushes us around in it.
No,
we all ride bicycles.
We have a 14-seater van and a trailer in the back, so it's... adequate.
It's spacious. Pretty righteous, I think.
Yeah, it is spacious.
It has an auxiliary cord,
and
so we're good.
We have a mini bar in there.
Yeah, no. We have an oyster bar, though.
And
yeah.
A Lebanese tiger.
Where does one acquire a Lebanese tiger?
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, we can't incriminate ourselves.
Lebanon.
I want to talk about a couple of songs on the EP. You can tell me kind of just, you know, what kind of inspiration you guys drew to write these songs. And I want to start with the single, which is Highway Tune. Tell me about, you know, what went into creating that song.
It all starts with the riff.
I don't know. We kind of pulled it out of our ass, and that was it.
That's a terrible answer.
When we first started, we realized that we had to, you know, be writing our own material, and we really wanted to.
That was written.
And that was one of
5 years ago.
It was one of the very first songs that, you know, I sat down and wrote the riff.
Yeah, you initially wrote the riff, and then
pieced the concept together.
Yeah, it stacked on after Jake kind of did the riff and I threw some vocals and lyrics on it. It was kind of really an ode to that appreciation for
rock and roll
music at its, you know, finest in our, I guess.
Yes, that was really the angle of that song, was to make it very appealing to rock and roll. And that's
well,
kind of our piece.
We write songs that we want to hear, you know?
Right.
And it's been strange because we never really plan on it going this far.
No. It's just one of those songs you're just cruising down the highway. You can't help but to put your foot down.
Yeah, don't listen to it while you're driving. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous.
I disagree. I get where I'm going very quickly.
Not in New York City.
Oh, well, you got to know which streets to take.
He drives around them.
Oh, yeah. Tell me a little bit about Black Smoke Rising, which is my favorite song on the EP.
Yeah, it's my favorite, too. That one is kind of a little bit more foreboding in a way, you know. It sort of talks, I guess, in some ways about the lessons of history and that man sometimes doesn't always learn from the lessons of history, and deals with archetypes, you know, like the tall towers and the fires and the war and that kind of thing. And so it deals with a little heavier themes. But ultimately it's a song that carries a lot of hope and a lot of the vision of a bright future and things like that, and that it talks about the unification of humanity and a lot of those sort of scenarios, you know.
Yeah, even from like an instrumentation, you know, perspective, you know, musically, I think it's a lot instrumentally. It's a lot more mature because it was one of the, you know.
It was the most
recent recordings, yeah.
Because we actually wrote Black Smoke Rising when we were working on the other three songs in the studio. So that was very...
the other Some God's songs.
It was very last second, but it turned out to be the title track.
Tell me about Safari Song.
Safari, I think, in a lot of ways, is our appreciation for blues music, you know. That kind of what shines in that, I think.
I think we're all excited to play that one live because of how much energy goes into it.
Yeah.
And I remember as we were writing it, that's what really caught our attention, because you stumble across riffs and licks all the time, but when something like that happens and everyone just unanimously agrees that...
I strongly agree. It's a high vibe
song. It is a high vibe song, and that one's fun. It wasn't exactly captured as well in the studio, but nothing really can be. Exactly. So that one's you know, that's a fun live song.
When I wrote that specific riff, I think that was my interpretation of kind of a blues riff, and trying to like take it to a different place. So that was trying to make it unique. But
I've heard a lot of Howlin' Wolf in that thing. You know,
I don't want to talk about it.
But to me, that was a lot of room to move around in it. But that riff caught my attention immediately, and I pushed for it for quite some time. That one's older, too.
Yeah, the reason it's called Safari Song is because when we initially wrote it, it was very much heavier in percussion-oriented.
Yeah.
And we had this big break where it was just drums, you know.
Congas, djembes,
African-esque.
Maybe we'll revisit that someday.
Yeah.
do it live on stage, get like 30 people just playing drums.
A show in Africa. Yeah. Brilliant.
And then it'll make sense with the title.
And lastly, tell me about one of the tunes you actually played for us acoustically today as well, Flower Power.
Oh. Flower Power.
That one was fun because it kind of wrote itself.
It did. Yep. Jake just came up with just two chords and just this simple melody, and I jumped on an old Wurlitzer organ that I got from my buddy, which is now deceased, rest in peace. But it just flowed out, and we got to that point where we were just musically just floating on it.
Yeah.
And
when I came around, there was the initial idea, you know, with what it would sound like, and then I thought that was so much fun to put lyrics on and vocal on. And
so it's so open.
Daniel and I went off, and I kind of got that together. And by the end of the day, what it was recorded, it was demoed by the end of the day, the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a really, I don't know, that piece of time was a pretty inspirational piece of time, so it kind of came out of that. We were all very inspired.
What drove me about that, it was it kind of captured that San Francisco scene in the late 60s, and it had a lot of folk elements to it, which is a lot of my favorite stuff, you know. And so there was that magic to it, you
know.
That's
the name.
And actually, I think it's quite a nostalgic song in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And that is. It's an acoustic song. It's our interpretation of how we want to perform an acoustic song.
Makes you feel good too, that song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Say that about a lot of your songs.
Oh, well, thank you.
I will say, you know, one of the great things about this band that I learned last night is seeing you guys play live. It's just an exciting thing. You know, it's you guys are up there, you're having fun. It translates very well to the crowd. But for people listening to this interview, go see them live, because it's not just these four songs. You guys have more songs that you play live that people haven't heard yet.
Yeah, we have plenty of.
And I got to actually hear two last night, which was great.
Did you like them?
I freaking loved Edge of Darkness. I was like,
yes.
This is sick. Oh, my God. So tell me a little bit about that one and what went into creating that.
Edge of Darkness.
That was something
that we wrote. That started with a melody.
Yeah, it started with, well, it was
Josh and I got bored at the studio while the other two were laying down some overdub tracks and whatnot, and we literally just went out in the parking lot with a phone and
strangely
and a guitar.
Enough, I had the vocal melody kind of mapped out already, and I was struggling to find something to put that on, you know, and that was the perfect song.
I walked out and they were working out. I'm like, what the hell is that? It's like brilliant, and like the vocals were soaring. We should do that electrically, and that was like, oh, it's worked out that way.
I love how our music is written. It can come from anybody at any given moment.
And that's a good example of, you know, just a theme that we can go off of, just a little vocal melody.
Yeah, it's a spark. It only takes a spark, and the entire song usually just explodes.
You need a certain amount of gasoline, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Conflagration.
Good word usage. That's an SAT word.
SAT word. That's where I learned it, vocab in high school.
He didn't learn it before the test, but during.
Conflagration. Yeah, I Googled it after the test. Like, what does that mean?
Oh, after. Even better, Jake.
This test went down in a great conflagration.
Exactly. There you go.
There you go.
Proper application.
See, this is an educational thing, too. People learn about bands, and we'll teach you new words. Too. That's what we do here at Hard Drive Radio.
Good, because we hardly graduated.
Well, then you better rely on Plan A, then, shouldn't you?
No, that's a joke.
Tell me about Talk on the Street, which is the other one that you guys played last night.
That was another one that was written in the studio, actually.
Wow,
this
is a theme.
Yeah, that was very much like Edge of Darkness, where I was playing along with that riff, and me and Danny probably came up with it in 5 minutes, the whole thing, and Josh was sitting there.
Something in another 5 minutes. I was like, okay, this is good. Let's vibe on it.
The studio, and I think, inspires us a lot to write.
It does.
Yeah, well, it's a great, it's an inspiring
You have all of this quarantined in one space with instruments and some free time. I'm sure that's just naturally going to happen.
It's pretty great. Sam walked out. He was finishing with his parts, and our producer just needed a break. He'd had enough of us. So we all we took the break time, and instead of eating, we just wrote another song.
Yeah.
Those are machines.
Sure.
I guess. It's like one of those natural functions, you know? Like many others
sleep,
I can think of.
Write music.
Right.
How much time do you guys spend just like, you know, playing with the knobs and dialing in your tone? And
not as much as I think that people would think.
I like vocals to be as clean as they can, so I can do whatever I'd like.
We all have certain standards. For example, yesterday we were using equipment that wasn't ours, and we spent a good two or three hours.
It varies.
Going out to different shops, getting different, you know, pedals and stuff to try to dial in that
getting
tone.
Getting tones and moving knobs is pretty much my whole entire life.
That's Sam.
It's not. He's not wrong.
He's the engineer of the group.
I'm very OCD about how things sound, like the actual tone of things. Like, I'd rather have something be offbeat than have it sound like shiitake mushrooms.
I should specify more accurately that maybe it really does depend for me on what tone I need. And sometimes I can flip on an amplifier or two and say, this is perfect, this is what I want. Sometimes it may take a bit longer.
The venue plays a large role in it too, depending on what the walls are made out of, how large it is. And
right.
Yeah, but there was a Marshall JTM. It was like a combo amp there last night. And to get the tone that we would want, we would just have to crank the hell out of it. And everybody in that basement would die. So we had to go out and buy a cool little overdrive.
I was thinking about like cutting a hole in the speaker with a box cutter.
Oh yeah, like the
kinks. Yeah,
there you go.
Yep, that's a genius.
Was that the big stack that was behind you, or
that was Jake's? That big Marshall thing.
I think it was huge.
Yeah,
that was pretty big. How heavy is that thing? Because like lugging that thing around to gigs has got to be like a real pain in the ass.
Yeah. Well, the thing is it wasn't ours, so thank God for that.
Yeah, but it was like we loaded it onto the stage and stuff. And it was lifting, and that was super heavy. That was super heavy.
The best
wasn't
equipment
even
always is heavy.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Who are the artists that you guys look to? You know, that kind of influence you in the music that you create.
That's a very eclectic list of people.
Yeah, there's quite a large pot to stir. Yeah.
Give me your three.
Jake has got to be the rock and roll man of the group, and Sam, I think, is jazz influenced, and Daniel is folk sort of roots, and I like world music, and that's, and, you know, and it goes every which way, but blues is that glue that bonds us, you know. Like, I like I love the funk stuff, too. Joe Cocker and Sam and Dave and Wilson Pickett. And I love John Denver, and I love Demis Russo, who's a European artist that was, you know, less popular here for a lot of time, and I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm a guitarist, so I have to have influences from people like Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and
Hendrix,
another good one. Yeah, like a lot of the British blues players and even the American blues players, like Elmore James, slide work is phenomenal. And then Dwayne Allman was, I learned a lot of slide stuff from him too. I really like, and so a lot of blues for me, well, for all of us. Blues.
Yeah, I kind of learned how to play bass from Motown music. Which is why it's a little bouncy.
Yeah, you play like a black man would play.
Thank God,
James Jamerson.
Thank God for that.
Thank you.
how instrumental were your parents in like supporting this and helping you guys succeed as a band?
Probably too instrumental.
Yeah,
they were over the top. They were just fantastic.
If not for you.
When you take a step back and think about what they did, they kept pushing for us just to succeed, honestly, and then just to let us go. That's the hardest thing to do as a parent.
They saw what we saw in it, and were completely supportive.
Because they had to listen to it coming from the garage for like
4 years. I think that's what did it, though. That's true, that they could see what we could see. And I think that they were instrumental in articulating that vision.
Yeah, and helping whenever we needed.
It's like nurturing a bird just to let it fly away.
It's a poetry.
Sunrise, it's poetry, sunset.
I think cycle. It's kind of like making a hamburger.
No. Well, I guess it could be.
What, burgers are pretty. I mean,
they are.
In their
honestly,
own way.
A work of art.
Yeah. God, now I'm hungry. Have you guys had lunch yet?
No.
All day.
Yeah, why would you make that connection?
So
that's all you.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. All right, you know, we're going to wrap this so you guys can go eat. Give me some advice that you would say to the kids listening to this interview who want to start a rock and roll band.
Don't do it.
Play
good music. Yeah. Play good music and keep going. Don't stop. If you believe in your music,
Honestly,
I don't think that anyone would stop if they
ride on the vibe of the spirit inside.
Don't fake it. Be true. Be true to yourself. No, that's really stereotypical.
Don't
but don't
make
fake
sure
it.
What you're doing is really what you want to do.
Right.
Too.
Always.
Yeah, because if you go into this whole thing and you're stuck writing music and playing music that you don't, then you're.
We were very.
You're pretty much
in
fried.
Some ways we were very adamant. In some ways, than the induction of our music and our presentation to this industry as something that was going to be what it was and how we wanted to make it and that they weren't going to touch it. And so far, so good.
They haven't touched it.
I haven't.
How long are we going to have to wait for a full length from you guys?
Just long enough.
Not very long.
We're thinking that they're going to be doing recording the next release this winter, so...
Because going back to Detroit, maybe?
I think it's LA this time.
I think
we
will be
in
Detroit or LA. Probably both.
Yeah, I think it's a good... We'll want to mix things up a bit.
All right. Any words to your fans?
We love you.
We love you. We love you, baby.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah, hoping to see all of your glistening faces.
Bright, shining
yes.
faces
yeah.
jumping about in the fun sun that's created when we're together.
Stay on the lookout.
Because without you guys, we'd just be four assholes.
Hey, mark that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Awesome.
There's a good quality to his statement. There's merit to that.
I think we still are four assholes.
Yeah, but four that have some support. And it's honestly a surprising amount of support from what I ever imagined.
I know. I wouldn't have. I did not expect. You know, that very stereotyped thing where you have an American band go to Europe, a European band go to the States, and, you know, we trade off artists and you're successful in that. But I've never thought we'd get this reaction in the United States. So far, it's been overwhelming.
Yeah,
like,
so thank you.
And it's all because of them.
What we're doing, which is a huge, you know, humbling sort of thing for us. So thank you to everybody who enjoys it, hopefully.
God bless you.
God bless you. Every one of you.
Every one, I guess.
All right. The band is Greta Van Fleet. The EP is Black Smoke Rising. It's out now, and they're on the road for a little while longer, and then hopefully back again. So if they're coming through your neighborhood, absolutely go see them live. It is an experience you will not forget. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to see us today.
Thank you.
It
was great.
All right.
This is Hard Drive DL. Check out more. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app or visit harddriveradio.com.